Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people. And their essential love of justice.
Hi, welcome to the Kudzu Vine for January 2nd, 2012. Coming to you a day late, if you will, but of course that's because New Year's was yesterday. I was in the Georgia Dome, and I'm sure other people were still celebrating in some way, although for a lot of people the 2nd is still like a holiday, but certainly a better one to do a little political talk. I'm David McLaughlin. And joining me, as always, Catherine Smith. Welcome.
Happy New Year, everyone.
Yes, and Tim Schiffle, how you doing?
I'm doing well. Good evening, everybody.
Yeah, well, and of course, people will be getting this, and hopefully people will get it in time that they'll think, hey, those people actually had, you know, 364 days, depending on how you count it, to talk about their predictions or for them to come true or false. Of course, before Iowa, we'll talk about that, and everything else we can get to. But a lot of forward-looking in this show, more than looking back at the past week, if you will, like sometimes the show will be. But I guess the first thing we ought to do is we ought to go ahead and kind of get into some predictions right off. And there's so many ways we can go. Of course, we can look at the national races and predict how things will fall. Also, since we're in the South, we don't necessarily want to look at every state individually. Might look at which state will make the most progress for Democrats in the South. And then just a few other little predictions like that. But I guess the House of Representatives, we can't look at this district by district. We'd be like, you know, one of those marathon shows that Kevin Ross and I did back in the day for 8 straight hours. But let's just look at it overall. Tim, what do you predict is going to happen in November with the U.S. House?
The Democrats have something of a chance now that they didn't have, I think, to actually flip the House, even though I think the Republicans will barely hang on, because mainly redistricting is going to negate a lot of gains. I do think the Democrats will gain. Because of some districts that Republicans won in the wave that they had no business winning.
Yeah, I got to cut. Sorry, I'm trying to do two things at once. Tim, I think you're right. There's a chance. It's just not incredible, if you will. Catherine, what's your thoughts on this?
I think it's going to probably stay about the same. I mean, we may gain a seat or lose a seat, but I don't think there's going to be a big, you know, upheaval in the House this year. I think it's, you know, people are either, you know, a lot of people are very unhappy, I think. But I think generally people are happy with their own representatives, usually. You know, we always find that. So I think it's probably going to stay about the same. Maybe we'll gain one or two, but I don't think we're going to win it back, and I don't think that the Republicans are going to get a whole big advantage either. So I think it'll probably stay about the same.
Yeah, I agree with y'all. It's just so hard to see it flipping that drastically when, of course, every district seems drawn to, you know, protect whoever was there or pack, in some states' cases, the other parties, people in as few as districts possible. Because it's like in a state like Georgia, they say, hey, there's got to be 4 or 5 of those Democrats. Let's all pack them in so we can have the other, you know, 7, 8 seats now, however they draw the lines. So overall, I just don't think the House is going to be flipped. I guess of all the three, it's maybe the least likely. Although, y'all know from listening past weeks, the presidency, I really don't think it's going to flip either, if you will. And let's move on to the Senate, though, staying in the legislative body. The U.S. Senate just seems to twist and turn every week, depending on who's running and who's retiring. And Ben Nelson decided he would not run and seek reelection. That's going to make holding on to Nebraska much tougher for the Democratic Party. I actually have not gone state by state and looked to see, but I think this thing's going to be real close, like 50-50, 51-49, one way or the other. Catherine, I'll let you have the first stab at the Senate.
I agree with you.
I think
we could lose the Senate. The Democrats could lose the Senate, but only by, you know, I think you're right. I think it could be 50-50, 49-51, something like that. I don't think there's going to be a big dramatic change, but I think, you know, we could lose control.
Yeah, and the tougher thing now with the Senate is, for either party, is you just don't have any Lincoln Chafee's or Jim Jeffers or Zell Millers or Joe Lieberman's, you know, the people that will support the other side. So it's not like you're going to be able to pick up a vote on the other side of the aisle to take, you know, change that 51-49 around, if you will. Tim, you may have looked a little closer at some of the states. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm figuring that the Republicans are going to target as many as 8 states. There's 33 seats up, and 23 of them are Democratic. You mentioned Nebraska. I also think North Dakota, which is open, is going to be very tough to hold on to. Wisconsin's going to be a huge battle. The Republicans have recruited Tommy Thompson there, and it's an open seat as well. Then, of course, we all know about the Virginia race, which is going to be one of the best ones in the country. Missouri's going to be hard. Montana, and of all things, Hawaii is going to be tough because Linda Lingle is running out there. As for the Democrats, I guess Massachusetts is their number one pickup opportunity with Scott Brown up there. Nevada is a possibility. And Arizona, but only if Gabrielle Giffords run. I do agree that the GOP has a very good chance to flip the 4 seats they need to flip and take control. So I think it's a good possibility that they can do that.
Yeah, I think the Nebraska and North Dakota seats, that just creates a little more uphill friction, if you will, although, you know, Massachusetts could offset that. Nevada really looks pretty optimistic, more
it
so than I thought
very,
it could be.
It looks very promising, especially in a presidential election year. That's what's going to temper some of these things. More Democrats than normal are going to be turning out, of course, to vote, and those that vote for the president are highly likely to vote a straight line down the ticket. So,
yeah, I mean, it's kind of where the Democratic Party has less room for error, but then sometimes in wave elections, which I think this may not end up being a wave against the party in the presidency, or maybe more of a wave for or a wave against the challenger, that may be pretty influential. But as we go through, we're going to get to see, you know, more of these races, you know, week by week. And I'm sure Missouri and Virginia we're probably more likely to pay a little closer attention to than some of the others. Well,
David, I'm going to interrupt you. We have a caller, and let's see who this is. And for some reason, there we go. Caller, are you with us?
Sir, I am. My name is Richard Peter. I'm founder of the Gold Money Party here in Texas.
Well, welcome,
how
Richard.
How are you doing today?
First of all, I'm great. Happy New Year, guys.
Thank you. Tell us about the Money Party, because I'm not familiar with it, but maybe Texans are.
Well, first of all, I'm a 70-year-old old codger here, okay? And I was invited to speak at an SMU political science class. And I talked a bit about the economy and all of the inflation that, you know, I believe we're going to be seeing bread double every 5 minutes in price. Not now, but in the future. And we talked about that. And then at the end of that meeting, this was about a year ago, young man said, can I talk to you after the meeting? And I said, certainly. And we talked. We went out to Starbucks, got some coffee. He said, you know, I'm not happy with either the Republicans or the Democrats. I have my own ideas, and I'd like to run for office, but I don't want to run on a platform I don't believe in. And I ask him a little bit about his background. And so a real sharp kid, comes from a good family. And he's a conservative politician. I don't know where you guys are. I don't believe in liberal or conservative anymore. I just want to do what's right. That's all I'm interested in. Hold on a second. Let me turn that off real quick. Apologize. Anyway, to make a long story short, he said, how can I don't have any money to speak of. All my tuition and college bills have eaten up my money. How can I run for office? I know the Republicans aren't going to take me. Even if they did, I wouldn't want them. And I don't think the Democrats are going to take me. Even if they did, I wouldn't want them. And I asked him to write out his principles and all of that, and some of the things I didn't agree with. But a lot of what he put down was thoughtful. Anyway, to make a long story short, over a period of a year, I'm fortunate enough to be blessed, and I have the time and freedom now to do projects, and this was a project I undertook. Well, what happened about 90 days ago, I wanted to get my attorneys to check everything out and make sure we were legal. But I developed a pay plan to where people could join the Gold Money Party, which is America's first self-funded political party. It's a privately owned political party. All of us are independent business owners. Nobody feeds off of anybody else. Everybody earns a 100% commission. And I got the idea when I was reading in the Bible about God telling Noah to lead them into the ark of safety 2x2. And so that's what we developed. I can't go into it on the phone. It took me 2 years to develop this. But feel free to go to goldmoneyparty.com. I have a video there that you can understand more about it. Our vision is to self-fund these young and old people, for that matter, doesn't matter what age, so that we can endorse them and write their name in the different races that are coming up in the next 3 to 5 years. John Kennedy, I don't know whether you knew this, was elected president by a write-in campaign. He got the nomination on a write-in campaign, which are still legal in all 50 states. So what I'm saying is that I like that young man and tired of having to choose between two people on the basis of a 30-minute soundbite, and we really never know who they are. The people the Gold Money Party will endorse are people we're working with. We just opened up the state of Florida. We've got over 500 here in Dallas after just 9 months. And by the way, that young SMU student just bought his brand new Honda, paid cash. So we were able to bless him. Now he's got an opportunity to work getting his beliefs put into practice. And if he can convince a majority of his colleagues in the Gold Money Party, we'll put our money to get him elected because we know who he is. I mean, he comes to our meetings every week. I'm a Southerner, by the way. I was born in Richmond, Virginia on 9/11/42, okay? Well, so I'm 69, almost 70. And I've been dissatisfied all my life about this two-party system of ours. Mary Kay does more for her distributors than the Republican Party ever did for any of its members. Amway has done more for people than the Republican and Democratic parties have done for their members. All the churches, when you go to church, they ask you to give money. They don't ever put any money in your pocket. So I came up with a clever idea, what I call a witty invention, where we can all become independent business owners in our own political party. Now, my principles may be different from yours, but I'm not going to change them. You haven't sold any memberships yet. But when you do, I'll consider changing the principles or adding to them. And that's what I wanted to call to share. What is Southern politics all about?
Well, this is the Kudzu Vine. We cover Southern politics. Catherine Smith, I'm David McLaughlin, Tim Shiflett. We come on every week and we just have all kind of guests. Richard, I bet Catherine and Tim are just like me. They've got so many questions for you. But since we've never heard of your concept, I think what we'd like to do, would it be possible, Richard, that Tim, Catherine, and I could read up on your party and have you back as a guest on a future Sunday night at 7 o'clock Eastern Standard Time?
I would be honored. I would be honored, sir. Now let me explain something. I'm real disorganized. So would you email me and let me know? I'm at Gold Money Party. My email address is goldmoneyparty@gmail.com.
Okay, well, we'll write that down and send an email. Also, Tim, if you'll grab his number off of the switchboard, and then we'll contact you, Richard, have you back on a Sunday soon.
Right.
When we can do a little research and maybe ask better questions than we would if we just caught you cold. Does that sound good to you, Catherine?
That sounds great.
Sounds fine.
The website is live and well at goldmoneyparty.com.
Yes.
Okay,
Richard,
thank you, Richard.
Thank you for reaching out and letting us learn about you.
All right, thank you.
We'll be in contact. All right, that was interesting, wasn't it?
Have you ever heard of this party? I have not, and I'm glad you grabbed the call because sometimes, you know, like last week, we had a caller and wouldn't anything, and so we didn't know what to do with it. But Richard obviously understands how to work a telephone to get on the air, and so we can talk with him. So, but we'll get back because I started to have some questions, and I thought, well, they may be insulting until I know more, and then if I know more and I still have the same questions, then I'll just ask them and make sure y'all will too. But the goldmoneyparty.com, we are just about to talk about the presidential race, and I guess for a few weeks now y'all can kind of tell that I just think things look better for the president than a lot of pundits may think, and a lot of my belief, I guess, is because the Republican field is so weak, but obviously that's such a quick prediction that I thought we'd actually go a little more in depth and talk about like which states might flip, you know. And I made a list each way of the most likely to flip, and I don't think all these will flip. I'll go ahead since it's my concept, and I'll be the bold one and go first. I think of all the states that that John McCain won in 2008. The first one I think is the most likely to flip is the Nebraska congressional district, the one congressional vote that the president got out of Nebraska. I think that one flips first. And then I think Indiana. I just never believed that the president went Indiana last time, and he did. And I just for some reason have a gut feeling that may switch back. I think Virginia and North Carolina are both pretty susceptible to switch. I do think having the convention in North Carolina will help and may keep that from happening. And then New Hampshire, I think, will be more susceptible to flipping. Obviously, Mitt Romney being the nominee would give them a better chance than if they picked a different candidate. And don't ask me why this little bell is just ringing like crazy when I'm stopped. And then on the other side, I think states that John McCain won that could be more likely to flip back to the president would be Arizona. Obviously, not having the hometown son on the ticket will help. Missouri, I don't know why, when I watched the video of the president's campaign manager this time, none of the paths included winning Missouri, and I don't know why that seems unrealistic to him. Montana, I think it's a possibility, obviously, having a Senate race up there helps. And then Georgia and South Carolina rounded out. Now, I do think other than Arizona and maybe Missouri, those are some tall orders. But when you start running the numbers, even when with giving the Republicans Florida and all these states, the president would still be ahead in electoral votes, 286 to 252, probably closer than he'd like. But that's why I think this race is not that close. Now, I know I said a whole bunch there. Catherine, what are some of your thoughts on the presidential race?
Well, I do think that, you know, I'm optimistic about President Obama, you know, prevailing for a second term. I think that when you look at his accomplishments, when we are, you know, honestly review his accomplishments, it's hard to deny that he's, you know, I think he's been very I think he's accomplished a lot. Of course, the economy is always at the front, and it seems like we might be facing a little bit of a turnaround in the economy. I see that more anecdotally in my small business, but I think there's generally the belief that we may be facing some improvements. I think that you're right that the, you know, Republican field is so they've just had so much trouble latching on to a candidate. I mean, we still really don't have a clear view of who might prevail tomorrow. And then, you know, going forward, I'm really at a loss as to what's going to happen. I haven't looked at all the states like you do. I'm not quite as I don't have as good a handle on all that. But I mean, I'm optimistic. I think it's going to be a lot of work, and I think it's going to be very close. I think it's going to be very close. We're going to be up late on election night. But I am optimistic, and I think that a lot of it has to do with both a combination of President Obama's accomplishments and the lack of any real leadership on the Republican side.
Yeah. Well, Tim, go ahead and tell us what you think. Now, you can just give the macro view or the micro, your choice.
Well, I pretty much had essentially the same list you had, except I didn't include I only had Missouri, Arizona, and Montana as states that the president might flip. There's just, to me, no way that either South Carolina or Georgia is going to flip unless there is a strong third-party presence that's going to pull a bunch of votes away from the Republicans. He lost Georgia by 5 points and South Carolina by 8 in years, you know, in a prime year. Same thing with Montana, even though he only lost it by 3%. That was in 08 when he won in a landslide. He lost Missouri by only 3,600 votes, and I have no idea why they would not include Missouri as a prime pickup. To me, that is the prime pickup. Now, the Republicans are really, really, really pointing. Because I think Indiana is going to flip. I think that was an accident. But they are really pointing at the state of North Carolina, where the president won by some little less than 14,000 votes. And they have just got to have either Florida or Ohio. There is no electoral scenario in which the Republican nominee wins without at least one or both of those states, none at all.
Yeah,
so
it's
pretty
much
tougher.
Yeah, and I tell you, I wanted to have a nice round five each way. And of course, when you have more states, last time you won, picking
right.
up new ground is tougher. I mean, it's like anything.
Right.
You know, losing weight, the last 10 pounds are harder than the first 10. You know, anything else you want to look at, improving your running, whatever it may be. And so one thing I did notice about Missouri is down to, I looked on 270towin.com, it is down to 10 electoral votes with both Kansas City and Missouri. I found it hard to believe that the state of Missouri only had 10 electoral votes. I almost wanted to check another site to make sure that was correct. But if that's
remember
correct,
something. Remember something. Every state except, I believe, the state of Massachusetts actually gained population last year, but some states just gained it faster, so they had to reallocate the electoral vote.
Oh, yes. But I know, I mean, obviously gain over time. But to me, that means that state has more of an urban feel than it would have before, because I just don't think St. Louis and Kansas City lost great numbers of population. I don't think there's been a big exodus there. And so, therefore, that state's probably more urban and suburban compared to the rural areas. And that, you know, lends itself to the Democratic Party being stronger. So I think Missouri's going to be more of a battleground. That also plays into the fact that the Senate seat that we
right.
talked about as well. I mean, if
right.
you're like, hey, we can play here, we can play there, and this place has a Senate seat that we need, this one doesn't, then you're going to look and focus more on it. So, and of course, the Republicans may think the same thing the other way. We got to defeat Claire McCaskill and at the same time hold these 10 electoral votes. So that's all going to come into looking at. And the Nebraska House seat, I don't even think you've even mentioned that before the fact. And he snuck up, and with their strange rules there in Maine, where you can win one electoral vote by that district, he won it. But, I mean, I haven't looked at that district carefully, but I know it wasn't won by much. And the Republicans with redistricting probably made it more Republican. And so, and it's not going to have Ben Nelson at the top of the ticket. Tim.
Right. They did make it a lot tougher, and I'm figuring that electoral vote is gone.
Yeah, that's why I said it was the number one pickup, which, if, of course, if you're the RNC and your number one pickup is one electoral vote in Nebraska, that can't get you too excited about anything. Well, I guess we've done all the predictions on the different presidential level races. I guess that leaves for us the southern state most likely to show Democratic progress. And since, once again, this is my crazy topic, I'll go first to, I guess, kind of, you know, jump off the diving board first. And I think South Carolina is going to show the most Democratic progress. Now, part of it is they have more room to, you know, to grow, if you will. They don't have the room to grow like a Virginia. I mean, Virginia or North Carolina may be more Democratic at the end of the day, but South Carolina has been so Republican for so long, they really have nowhere to go but up. And I could see a scenario in which the president does better in, say, South Carolina than he does in Georgia, closes that 3 percentage point gap. Maybe the fact that Nikki Haley is so unpopular there helps, whatever it may be. But I do think South Carolina is the state that, you know, it's going to be better. And it may be in some House races and some different things they show progress. Catherine, what state do you think is going to do the best?
Oh, boy. I'm going to pass it over to Tim while I'm thinking about it some more. I've thought about it most of the day, but I don't have a good answer. Go ahead, Tim.
Yeah, my state is Florida, David. You got a strong senator basically at the top of the ticket for us down there because Florida is so important electorally.
The Obama campaign is going to put far, far, far more resources into that state than any other southern state, whereas they might just make a pass at South Carolina and go on. And these two things combined, I think, are going to, you know, filter down the ballot and help a lot of local candidates.
So and frankly, Florida was just an absolute disaster for us last year, and I think we're going to show a great deal of improvement in that state.
Yeah,
that's
okay.
Florida,
210 to 212. We got a lot of room. We got a lot of room for improvement in a lot of states. Then Virginia would come back on the map because how bad we did in state elections there. But you know, we could actually do better. It could be a thing where Florida's not a nail biter. It's a comfortable, say, 6-point win, which you're thinking 6 percentage points. Well, compared to, you know, a few hundred votes in any precinct, and, of course, you look at some of the recount work they did, it might have been in the double figures between Al Gore and George W. Bush in 2000. So that would be growth for Florida. And I tell you another thing that's going to happen in a lot of these other states, even states like Kentucky and Tennessee and Arkansas, where the president actually did worse than John Kerry. I think there was a boogeyman factor surrounding the president and Senator Obama at the time, and that worked a lot with older voters and some southern voters, and I think some of that's gone. I mean, they're obviously
I tend to agree with you on that.
Yeah, and that's going to help him in Florida and help him in those three other states I mentioned and West Virginia. I think the president, some of that will be like, well, you know, he's just a regular guy raising his family. He may be of, you know, a mixed heritage, but who cares? And some of that will go away, and that will help him with some swing voters or maybe some Democrats that for some reason may just had fears and didn't vote for him. They'll come on home, you know, not hundreds of thousands of voters, but 10,000 here or there, you can see an uptick in places. Catherine?
I agree with that. I think that there's a lot to be said for that. You know, I think now that people have seen him in action, and I think there's less fear of for whatever reason, whatever fear there was. I think that's a very good point, and I think I hope that the president benefits from that now that people know he's kind of an ordinary guy, really. I mean, he's a superstar, but he's still an ordinary guy who takes his dog out for walks and, you know, plays with his kids and, you know, takes his wife out to dinner. You know, he's not anything to be feared anymore, I think. I think people understand that now. I'm going to go with 10. I think Florida is going to be a game changer myself. That's what I've been thinking about all day. So.
Yeah, I think the video they showed of his family, and that includes his sister's family, who's Asian and white, all coming out together, and his youngest daughter picking up, I guess, the president's niece, her cousin, who looks very Asian. I think that was kind of some good video because I think that there may be some people that thought, oh, black president. And then whatever Jeremiah Wright, the worst fears about him, some people may have just grafted onto the president, and people may now be seeing, wait, this guy. And if they learn more about his past and really learn, they're going to see this guy is a definite composite of America, but he's definitely not some pro-only black figure that some, you know, fears may be put out there in some quarters, like the lady that John McCain had to actually, I guess, talk some sense into, if you will, in 2008. I mean, that kind of fear was real then, and some, for some people, and I just don't think you can find as much of that. I'm sure you can go to certain meetings, certain places, and get a little bit, but the numbers are diminished.
Oh, it's still out there. It's just that I think that some of our Democrats are not feeling that anymore.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing for the Democratic Party is an enthusiasm gap, if you will. And that's why, I guess, Robert Reich, and we may have talked about this last week, he's actually predicting again for the umpteenth time that Hillary Clinton and Joe Biden will switch spots, which to me, if they're agreeable to it, I do think that could build some enthusiasm. And that if that's all that you feel the Democratic Party needs to continue to hold the White House, I'd do it. I mean, it's kind of like if you have a sports team and you say, look, instead of playing guard, I want you to play forward. Well, if it's for the good of the team, you make the switch. But, of course, that's up to those two individuals as well, what they're comfortable with. So we shall see. And I guess by the end of this year, you'll know if we're right or wrong. But we'll talk plenty about all this as we get there. Tim?
Yeah, I was just going to say the president's people addressed that particular rumor and said it was total nonsense. Now, I imagine they would say that even if there was something to it. But for some reason, I agree with them because, frankly, I think the president personally likes Joe Biden. That's why he picked him. And I don't think the president and Hillary Clinton actually personally like each other. I think presidents and vice presidents most times do like each other. There have been exceptions to that, like with Kennedy and Johnson. But I really think that this particular time that rumor's not true.
But people do need to figure out, you know, really the Secretary of State's job is more powerful than the vice presidential slot throughout history. I mean, it's been called a warm jar of spit and everything else. I watched the movie The Conspirators, I guess, in the past week, and the Secretary of War, he took over. The vice president was almost an afterthought at points. And that was actually when Lincoln assassinated. I mean, there's been different times in history. Alexander Haig, I guess, he tried to excerpt.
Yeah, don't worry, power. I'm in charge.
I'm in charge.
I think the vice presidential slot in some ways would be a demotion for Hillary Clinton, but if it got people ginned up and then, of course, like Robert Reich was saying, people felt that was a better launching pad for a 2016 campaign that might get some energy going. Although I don't know why you can't go from Secretary of State to President, particularly if Joe Biden doesn't run anyway, which that's a whole bunch of speculation down the road. But for what it's worth, were there any more predictions for the year that we had to go through? Because I don't think we got into state house seats and anything else, did we?
in our pre-show. So let's go ahead and move on to Iowa, because obviously that's the first step along this journey to knowing, you know, certainly who the president will face and what goes from there. And they keep cycling candidates in and out, and the latest flavor of the week seems to be Rick Santorum. Now, Rick Santorum may not win, but the way the media begins to frame this thing, if he finishes in the top three, it's almost like he's going to be the winner, which, of course, you know, that's not good for Ron Paul and Mitt Romney, who look to be the other two people in the top three. Catherine, what do you make of the Rick Santorum phenomenon?
I don't know what to make of it. I was shocked when I kept seeing all this, all these, you know, numbers and, you know, polls saying that, and just like reporting saying that he was, you know, zooming in at the, you know, zooming in at the last minute here. I guess that the Iowa voters are more conservative than I expected, I suppose. And he's been there. He's been, you know, hanging out there for quite a while. So I guess all that work may pay off. It may not. I mean, we may be shocked to learn that he doesn't get much support at all. So,
yeah, it's almost like these top three come from three distinct tribes, if you will. Romney, the establishment Republican, Rick Santorum, social conservatives, and Ron Paul, libertarians, if you will, are the more libertarian wing of the party. Now, of course, that gets to then where do Gingrich and Bachman and Perry voters go if their candidate doesn't make it? Because a lot of these caucuses, if your candidate does not get enough votes in a certain caucus, then you have to go join another set of folks. It's a very crazy process, but it's who has the organization of these three and then who can start to get the second choice voters. And then, of course, who can get their people out to the polls, which to me, Ron Paul, he almost doesn't have to get his people out to the polls. They'll get themselves out anyway. Mitt Romney of the top three seems to would have the toughest time there. Tim, what do you make of these? Do you agree these are the top three, and what do you think of them?
Yeah, absolutely. Throw those three names in a bucket and just pick one out. I think it's going to be that close. I think it's a nail-biter among the top three, and then there is a significant drop-off to number four where either Gingrich or Perry seems to be settling in. Santorum could actually pull a surprise and win there. Pull a Mike Huckabee's, what do you do? 60% of the voters in this caucus are evangelicals. Those are the people that people like Perry and Bachman and Gingrich were all going after, and one by one they fell off the map. Now it seems that these people are gravitating toward Santorum. That being said, historically at least, the winner of this particular caucus, David, in most cases has not gone on to win the nomination. Now, Bush 43 is an exception, but look at some of the other winners, like Huckabee, for instance. So if Santorum does win this, where does he go from there, you know?
Yeah, he'd have to skip New Hampshire because he wouldn't have the funds raised. And I think a lot of the Republicans will try to marginalize New Hampshire to try to say it doesn't count. And then if Mitt Romney wins it,
You know what? There's 4 years ago, there were 118,000 Republicans, and that was all, that participated in this statewide caucus. That's a pretty small number of people that do a first in the nation thing. It's far more important on the Democratic side for some reason than it has been on the Republican side, where New Hampshire seems to do the launch. Like in 1980 when Bush won Iowa and then Reagan won New Hampshire, Reagan won the nomination. Unless it's Romney. Now, if Romney wins here, he sweeps and it's over quickly. But
But I wouldn't pay a whole lot of attention to Santorum winning this. Where's he going to go from there?
Yeah, I would try South Carolina if I were him, but, you know, it'd be interesting.
Well, good,
I think
good luck with no staff or money. That's all I know to say.
And then, of course, then he'll have to choose if he wants to wear Gamecock or Clemson Tigers jacket ad nauseum, as he's apparently been photographed every location, whether they're Iowa Hawkeyes hat or jacket.
Well, let me throw this question out there. You know, Michelle Bachmann seemed to put all of her eggs into this basket, and the polls show her right now running sixth. If she runs that badly, is she going to be the first one of these seven to drop out?
Yeah, first one of these seven. It's like, what do you expect of your campaign is the question. I mean, like, Buddy Romer should have already dropped out.
I'm not even counting Romer. The other one of the seven I'm counting, of course, is Huntsman, who's not even contested.
It kind of the crazier you are, the longer you'll stay in. And I think if she finishes sixth and, say, Gingrich finishes fifth, Gingrich will get out first because there's less crazy there. I mean, he probably has some books to sell and some TV appearances to
you
try to hold on to.
You don't think he would hang around to South Carolina because he would have everything to gain there?
If he thinks they can marginalize the New Hampshire win for Romney, if you will, and it obviously depends on what the story is coming out of Iowa. You know, to me, I'm wondering if Ron Paul wins this, will it just be dismissed? Because I still see
that's what I think.
Where Paul wins a lot more than he ever should, and a lot of establishment Republicans begin to tear him down. And then he may just take his ball and go home, but not really go home, take it to a third party, and then the Republicans will be in chaos. So I think they have to be very careful how they handle Ron Paul. And if they're going to lose anyway, they may just want to do a 64 and just he's their Goldwater. And, you know, then, of course, they can say the right message, flawed vessel, and then just build from there if they think they're going to lose, although I think they're more optimistic about their chances than I am. Catherine?
Yeah, I think that I think a lot's going to depend on, like you said, if Mitt Romney wins Iowa strongly, then it's going to be short. If Ron Paul wins Iowa, and you know, Romney and Santorum, and if it's pretty evenly distributed, but Ron Paul wins, then I think it's really kind of like a restart, you know. New Hampshire as a whole, it starts over in New Hampshire. And I think that a lot is going to, you know, if Newt Gingrich gets, you know, 3 or 5% or something in Iowa, then I think he's got to quit. I mean, if he gets, like, really minimal support, I think I suppose he could wait till South Carolina, but I think it would be kind of embarrassing. I really think it's going to depend on, you know, how strong the top three are. You know, if they take, you know, 75% of the votes, and then the other four take 25% split up between four, then I think it's going to be pretty, you know, humiliating for those four, and you're going to see some people drop out. But if it's more evenly distributed, I think it could just, you know, go on a lot longer. That's my opinion.
Yeah, and Rick Perry's probably also, to me, he's less crazy than Michelle Bachmann, and so therefore he might be quicker.
Yeah, well, less crazy than Michelle Bachmann.
Well, I'm just saying. I wouldn't say Herman Cain's necessarily less crazy, because obviously he had all this baggage and thought it would never come up, which to me is the very definition of insanity.
I agree with you. I just think it's pretty funny that we're, you know, using Michelle Bachmann as the gauge of crazy.
Yeah, I mean, you can go to the crazier side of crazy than Michelle Bachmann. I think the lady in Delaware gets there. You know, some of you.
Alvin Green on our side certainly does.
He does. I think, yeah, give, and The fella down in Florida, Alan Keyes, or not Alan Keyes,
yeah.
Alan West. I mean, you know, you can find them. You know, just
the thing is, I've often thought that there were four good tickets to punch out of Iowa. There's those top three that are going to be, there is going to be a gap between them and the next group. But I think the person that finishes fourth is going to feel pretty good about it because they can point to the others and say, aha, I am the alternative now. I'm the number one alternative candidate, and everyone needs to coalesce around me. If that
in order for that to work, they're going to have to get, you know, significantly more than the person behind them and be pretty close to the people ahead of them. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
If everybody gets five, then it's going to be...
What's the narrative?
Perry, if it's Rick Perry at number four, Catherine, I think he may really take it to heart because he has a lot of money. And
right.
He could just stay in it for the heck of it for a long, long time if he so desired.
I think that's a definite possibility, that Rick Perry would stay in if he comes in fourth.
Yeah, you agree,
yeah.
David?
I do think there's a role for a fourth candidate. It's so funny, you've got the social conservatives, Santorum, the establishment, but this wishy-washy poll on everything. Now it's come out that Mitt Romney polled to get his abortion stance. Which would probably not play real well in the heart of either party that you did that. It's probably that middle people that don't have any party that might be less turned off by that. And then, of course, you've got Ron Paul, libertarians. It's almost like, you know, there is this need for this establishment but core conservative that doesn't, you know, change his principles, but somebody without any baggage that sort of seems to, you know, halfway have a clue. And that candidate's just not in this Republican field. That Tim Pawlenty that got out may have been that candidate. A lot of candidates that never got in may have been that candidate. But, of course, you know, Newt Gingrich, we've said he's probably one of the brighter, maybe the brightest in the Republican field, but he's got all that baggage. You've got, you know, Rick Perry, if you take the picture of him and list the resume, it looks right, but then he can't answer simple questions in a debate. He's not that candidate. So it's like they're still searching for that candidate that doesn't exist, but they can't get in now. You know, it's too late. So I don't know what happens out of this because you just can't make Rick Perry sharp enough, and you can't erase three marriages and leaving your wife with cancer of Newt Gingrich. I mean, there's just – you're going to have to stick with one of these fellas or ladies.
Let
Bachman. They could at least make history, if you will.
I hate to say the obvious, but Huntsman would be a good candidate, but he can't win. But that's why I'm saying if they don't pick Mitt Romney, they're crazy.
Yeah, I don't. I forgot about Huntsman. That's the problem. We like Huntsman better than the rest of them. You know, if you were all forced us and you said these are the 7-8 people you have to choose from, all of us would probably pick Huntsman. That means he'll never win in a Republican primary.
Well, that's because, I believe that Huntsman is not a Republican. He may not be a Democrat, but he's not a true Republican. I mean, if you listen to him, he doesn't sound like a Republican. He might be like our father's era Republicans. Or your grandfather, David, but he's not a Republican in this day's Republican Party. He just isn't.
He's much too moderate.
Poorly. Yeah, he's doing so poorly.
Well,
and I did see in Public Policy Poland had a new poll that showed they think maybe as much as 8% of the Iowa caucus electorate will be Democrats.
Really?
You know, If you look at the numbers, it says Democrats self-identified 8% is going to vote in this caucus. And, you know, of course, I think 6 of that 8 is going to just go in there to wreak havoc. Now, of course, if all of them said, hey, we need the best nominee as a backup choice, then Huntsman might could get that percentage of people. But I do think people are going to go in there. And I think if it does get to where people are trying to, you know, wreak havoc in their primary, where do you go? I would think Ron Paul would be a pretty quick
right.
way to create a mess, if you will, for them. Of course, I think the president's campaign is planning on running against Mitt Romney. If you look, everything they've been doing has been talking about Mitt Romney. They released the Mitt versus Mitt site. Everything's focused that way. Maybe I guess they're preparing for the toughest possible candidate, if you will. But that's what
David,
they're thinking.
Let's just be honest. If the alternative is either Dr. Paul or Rick Santorum or Newt Gingrich or Governor Perry or Michelle Bachmann, hey, I pick Romney. For the good of the country, you know, please. I don't want any chance for one of those other five people I just named to get any closer to the presidency than they are now on the off chance that they could actually win in November. Give me
Mitt
Romney.
I guess, Tim, you could have him run on the slogan, Mitt Romney, : everybody agrees with him half the time.
Yeah, there we go, but...
So, you know.
But I just think he would be a person of some ability when he actually walked into the Oval Office. I don't want somebody saying, hello, I'm President Bachmann, now give me the nuclear launch codes. I shudder to think about that. It's just me.
Yeah, and of course that would be the scenario in which the president can start putting Texas in play, maybe even the Dakotas and Alabama in play, if you really got the thought of her with the launch codes is something to run against. Well, more presidential, but we're going to move it away from Iowa to Virginia, and you're probably thinking, well, Virginia doesn't have a primary coming up for a while. Well, they have to get their ballot straight. And as of right this moment, you have two choices. You have Ron Paul and Mitt Romney. And since Mitt Romney can't get more than like 27% of Republicans, that means Ron Paul has like 73% possibility of taking that thing, if you will, or that's his universe to play in, if you will. And so now the Republican Attorney General, I guess, wanting to get on the good side of Republicans in his state, is said that this should be opened up and they should get to add more candidates to the field. Now, obviously, you know, I really don't mind the Republicans having the choices they're having in Iowa, having in New Hampshire. But then part of me also says, if you can't do something as simple as run, you know, get on the ballot to run for office, do you really deserve the office? It's kind of like saying, I didn't send in my resume, I didn't fill out the job application, give me the job anyway. It kind of shows a little lack of organization, if you will, and you kind of have to wonder about that. Although I will say, I don't know what the laws are in Virginia, but I have to wonder if they're, like, unnecessarily complicated. And to me, that's something Virginia ought to look to fix, maybe say, look, these are our only two candidates this time, but the process is too complicated. Let's streamline it and bring it in line with other states. Tim, what do you know about Virginia?
Well, first of all, you mentioned that Attorney General there, Ken Cuccinelli, was wanting to step in and intervene and get on the good side of Republicans. Well, what this means is that the legislature would have to be called into special session by Governor McDonnell, because they're not due back till January the 11th, and he's not predisposed right now to do that. The House Speaker is opposed to changing it for this year's elections, and the Lieutenant Governor is the chair of Mitt Romney's statewide campaign. And so in the last 24 hours, the Attorney General has had a sudden change of heart, and he's backed off. Oh, and there's one more thing. It takes a vote of 4/5 of each house to make this type of change in their state election laws, and the votes are not there. Now, they're talking about changing it for the future, but it's not going to be changed this year. I believe it was either last week or the week before, Catherine said it right. if you can't do something like get 10,000 signatures to get on the ballot, then you're not running a credible campaign. If Mitt Romney
right, exactly.
and Ron Paul did it, the rest of them did it. Right, Catherine?
Exactly. I mean, this is just, you know, you need to have your people, your staff ready and, you know, figuring out what they need to do to get on those ballots and get it done. If you can't do it, either it's an indicator that you have weak staff and you should have known that and you should have taken care of it yourself, or that you're weak and, you know, it's just a bad indicator all around to me. Like,
yep. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so you're going to have two candidates, David, is what you're going to have right there. It's going to stand like it is.
And it'd be interesting to see if this race even has more candidates, but pretty much is a Paul-Romney race. And Romney is just winning a state here and a state there because the field is big. And all these people coalesce against him or just aren't motivated to go out because maybe Romney's supporters say, he should have this one. And Ron Paul gets another win. This will just be more fuel to his fire, if you will. And that's really the only thing this guy lacks is legitimacy. He's got money. He's got followers. If he can gain legitimacy, he can do some real damage in their primary. So I think he's going to be the one to watch at several steps, if you will. Well, I guess we've just got just a few minutes. And I want to talk about a little video clip that I sent y'all that was part of a bigger special. It was on Vanguard on Current TV. And if you hadn't watched Vanguard on Current TV, it's like 60 minutes except for one topic. And I've watched so many of these different episodes because they'll replay them all the time because I guess they just don't have the programming CBS does, the volume at least. But this one was called Two Americas, and it looked at a really wealthy family in Houston, and then a family that was struggling really badly in Houston, and the two Americas. One thing they did agree on was politics. The family that was having to look at pawning their television set just to pay the light bill and having to go to churches to ask for money to pay their light bill, begging to keep their telephone on so they could get job calls for callbacks on jobs. I mean, you really felt for the people. And then they watched this debate. I still felt for the people, even though this fella just still said, oh, I agree with the Republicans. I agree with Newt Gingrich. I agree with Ron Paul. Oh, you shouldn't ask for a handout. The government shouldn't be the one to help. The guy was on paying any bill he did pay through pretty much unemployment assistance. But he was okay with that going away because he felt charity would pay for everything. And I looked at that and I thought, well, let me have to email Tim and Catherine and say, watch this. Because to me, this is just a microcosm of why we have so much trouble, particularly in the South, because I think there's more fault like this that I may be down and out, but I can still be a good Republican. And that's why the Democratic Party struggles so in the South these days. Catherine, did you get to see even this part of the special?
I did not. I really tried to find it, and I had some trouble. I couldn't watch it on my iPad, and I couldn't find it on my TV, so I didn't get a chance to watch it. But, you know, it's a old story. People
yeah,
vote against
but it was just so clear. I mean, it may be this old story, but when you see the guy saying it all, it makes it more real. Tim, did you happen to get to see the clip?
Yeah, I saw the segment. First thing I noticed, the guy sitting there and they're saying he is unemployed right now and his wife is, and they're getting food stamps and they're getting unemployment checks and this and that and the other. And he was sitting there puffing cigarettes. Now, you know, I don't really have anything against them. I smoked them myself for 26 years till I gave them up. But those things are over $4 a pack. Hey, buddy, put those down, and there's your light bill right there. You know, just
yeah, that was,
prioritize.
That was not lost on commenters on Daily Code.
And another thing about this guy, I wasn't surprised, David. He's a Southerner, and I say that with a heavy heart because
I'm one too, but they never seem to learn about some things down here. This region has been the most, I would say, any government region of the country, definitely for the last 50 years since the civil rights stuff heated up. And another thing I'd like to say about this guy, if he is so opposed to government handouts, then he should refuse to take them. I mean, nobody forces this guy to take anything. That's a voluntary thing. You go and sign up for it. Let's see who else will give him $19,000 a year and $100 worth of groceries a week. There are no charities in the country with the resources to handle all these millions of people that are in the same pot that this guy is in. So, I don't know what he's thinking. He's just in total denial or something, because there is no government or no private charity that can step in and do this. None.
He's not thinking. That's the biggest thing. He's not thinking. But if it was just this one guy, it wouldn't be a story. But, across the country, and particularly across the South, and probably even some swing states up north like Pennsylvania and Ohio, you have a lot of people that think like this. And it's just they think against their own self-interest so badly. Even when the guy gets a job, the guy probably doesn't realize all the government services he uses as a contractor. What if the, some of the stimulus money goes to building the next project that he builds and he actually works to, pay his bills then? It's still government influenced. I mean, we could go on, but it's just, it's something that I don't know that can be cured, but it seems like something that needs to be attacked in some way to change people around.
David, let me interrupt and tell you something. I'm looking at the switchboard. None of our numbers are there. I got a feeling we all got kicked off.
Well, it could be podcasting, too. Because a few weeks ago, that did happen to us. And it cut Mike and I off, boom, right off on the Southern Sports Universe. But I tell you what, we're at the end of that topic, and it's right after 3 o'clock, so it's time to call it a day. And next week we'll be on at the regular time, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Sunday evening, and the Wild Hog Supper will be going on. We'll try to get a little report from there, but I don't think we'll send a whole team down like we may have in the past. But until then, it's been the Cudzoo Vine.
Good night, everybody, or good afternoon.